Okay, so tonight I like to do comparisons, and comparisons for me are interesting because so many times I see so many similarities between the two people that I'm comparing or some type of event. You know, last week we talked about the Egyptians, and in my opinion, just how they were portrayed as just a pretty elite group of people that had a lot of blessing, and that basically complained about every little thing that they had a chance to complain about, and they didn't wait very long before they complained. If they complained about something, 5 minutes later they're complaining about something else. And then we went over and saw what Paul was writing to the Thessalonian church and said, you know, I'm so proud of y'all because you're just transcending above all of the clutter that goes on. You're persecuted, but you know, I don't hear anything but great things about you, and you're doing so well, and I just want to be with you because I love the fact that you guys are doing it so right, and you know, I miss you. And you know, the two compared to each other, both were God's chosen people, and one was completely unaware, and also just had one man that was a person just like them that basically lead them, and whereas the church there at that Paul was writing to was had transcended above that and had tied on to Christ, and everything that Christ was such a inspiration to them. It was a totally different attitude towards everything. I like that comparison. And tonight, the comparison is going to be between Cornelius and Peter. And just exactly, you know, how they both were converted in certain ways, like we'll get through it. We'll start reading in Acts chapter 10 about it. But you know, what comes out to me in this story about Cornelius is that, you know, the two different people, but both had access to God's grace, and they had to get past their human and tendency, traditional thoughts, and their bias, prejudice views regarding one another, to get to the point where they could both see each other eye to eye and on equal ground, with Christ being the great equalizer. And it was great that they did that. And it's a period of 4 days it all happens. And a couple of things that we're going to read about are just how they both were focused around one key thing, which is prayer. They both took time to pray. So we'll start off by reading some of this. And, you know, I'm ADHD, so I stop and start and talk and chatter. And if y'all have any questions at all, stop me and say, oh, wait a minute, go back, I didn't get that. But I'll try to read this, because I think it's worth reading. I mean, I think the chapter is definitely worth reading, so we'll do that. And then we'll talk about each of the things that, if I can go through the whole thing, I will. But if I stop, don't blame me. I warned you. Okay. Acts chapter 10. There was a certain man in Caesarea called Cornelius. He was a centurion of what was called the Italian regiment, a devout man and one who feared God with all his household, who gave alms generously to the people and prayed to God always. About the ninth hour of the day, he saw clearly in a vision an angel of God coming to him and saying to him, Cornelius. And when he observed him, he was afraid and said, what is it, Lord? So he said to him, your prayers and alms have come up for a memorial before God. Now send men to Joppa to send for Simon, who is surnamed Peter. He is lodging with Simon, a tanner, whose house is by the sea. He would tell you what you must do. And when the angel who spoke to him had departed, Cornelius called two of his household servants, a devout soldier from among those who waited on him continually. So when he explained all things to them, he sent them to Joppa. That's day one. And that's a pretty big day for a guy named Cornelius, that we know that through what it tells us a lot about Cornelius. The main thing that I started with is it tells me that he prayed. And not only did he pray, he gave of his wealth to others. It doesn't necessarily say he gave it to poor people or people of need. He just gave of what he had. So he was a generous man. Now, what I see is, I see when I read this, I'm sure you do as well, that for whatever action, he got a reaction. His action and reaction is pretty much, I did these things, Cornelius did these things, he was this type of an example, and he was heard by God. And what's interesting is he wasn't a Christian, and we all know that. But yet, it just so happens that what he was doing was definitely heard by God. Let's talk about the things that he was. In this first few verses of this story, it says, number one, he was a devout man. It says, number two, he and his family feared God. He gave to the people. And number four, he prayed always. I think sometimes there's maybe a thought that only the righteous people will be heard of God. I mean, only the Christian believers will be heard of God. I don't think everybody believes that here, but I think a lot of times we might set ourselves apart a little bit because, you know, we believe we have the direct access, and we know we have the direct access to God, but sometimes it's thought of as maybe we're the only ones that do, and I don't think that's the case. I think that everyone can be heard, but depending on how they pray and act in life is depending on whether or not they're going to be recognized by God. Obviously, from this few verses, that's true. I think that it's a huge part of the story that you start off with the fact that he was a good person, a devout man. He was a great example to his family. He was fearful of God. He knew of God. And in the previous chapter in Acts, it talked about how the church grew. And I think it says it grew in Judea. It grew in Caesarea. No, wait a minute, not Caesarea, Judea. There was three places. It was Acts chapter 9, verse 31. We can look at it. Who can turn back to that real quick and look at that? Acts chapter 9, verse 31. What does it say? Judea, Galilee, and Samaria. And that grouping of towns right there, it grew, and the way it grew is, tell me, read the whole thing for me, would you, please? That's it. It says it grew with the fear of the Lord, and it talks clearly about a devout man, Cornelius, being a devout man who feared God as well. So he couldn't help but hear about the growth of the church because he was not far from it, nor he was north of Joppa where Peter was. it says, the old maps go all over the place, but it was a day's journey, obviously, because of the scripture here that we read. And it took me a long time to go 40 miles. I don't know how far it was, but a day's journey for somebody back then, it may be 40 miles, but that's a long day's journey walking. So he was obviously around. The point is, he was around a lot of excitement and growth in church. I mean, this is the new beginning. This is Acts. This is where it's happening. He's seeing something grow. And what were the Romans typically, what was their position typically when it came to Christians, especially that type of growth? I mean, the Romans were a little bit intimidated by it. I mean, they were okay with different religions, obviously. They didn't care. But they were a little intimidated by it because Christian growth meant the Jews were pretty upset about it. And they didn't like any kind of shakiness in their government. Like, the politics should be just pretty easy. Everybody makes their payments. Their tax is paid. Everything is relaxed, and we don't want anybody from Rome to find out that we got some problem down here. I mean, that was their position. But it says in that chapter 9, it says it was peaceful growth. At that time, it was. So this Italian Roman, this centurion, let's see. Yeah, he was a centurion in charge of an Italian regiment. This guy was he was influenced by this movement, so much so that it was a life-changing thing for him. But what is that kind of like? I mean, the Ethiopian eunuch was very similar to this story, wasn't he? I mean, he was like, I don't really understand what I'm reading. I don't understand it. I believe it, but I don't quite understand it. And he needed some explanation for it. But he was open-minded enough. But it was something about it that was so exciting to him that he wanted to be a part of it. And he knew enough about it that he would pray and he would give. And he was so committed to it that his family was too. That's interesting to me. You know, it's interesting to a person that grew up in the church, right? I mean, unfortunately, I don't know enough people that have just been that kind of person. Like, they were so influenced by what was going on over here at the University Church that they got their whole family excited about what was going on over here. But yet, because of who they were, they weren't really interested in coming inside here and participating with us. You know, he was a Gentile. And they were Jews. And they were two people that didn't connect at all. We read that. I mean, they may have looked a lot alike, but because they were different people, I mean, he stayed within his circle. He did what he was doing, and they would have never met unless it was for God. One other thing that's pretty interesting about the first three verses is it said about the ninth hour of the day, he saw a vision. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to chase this little rabbit down this hole. Let's talk about the ninth hour and check that out. Maybe it's written here for the reason for me to do that, or maybe it's just one of those things where he saw as an example most of the time. People would take that time of day to actually pray and meditate on things. Interesting thing is the ninth hour, from what I read and have researched, is like from 3 p.m. to dark. And the consensus is that that would be the time a lot of things happen in the Bible. You remember the ninth hour was significant for Jesus. Just coincidental, I guess. But nonetheless, if you do a little word search on ninth hour in the Bible, it brings up some pretty interesting things that have happened at that time of period. But Cornelius, at the end of the day, one thing I want to bring up about this ninth hour is, at the end of the day, most of us are what? Like me. Can you see what I am right now? I mean, we are tired. At 3 o'clock, we start getting hungry. We're starting to look for the news. We're starting to wind things down. It gets kind of busy with home. I mean, I think that traditions back then were not a big difference than what we are today. We all get tired when we've been up for 12 hours. That's true. But he was not a Christian, although he was a devout man and he prayed to God. I mean, at the ninth hour, a lot of people in the world do a lot of worldly things. I mean, it's just the way it is. I think that the hard thing for me to do is to actually take that dedicated time when I'm tired and I'm hungry to seek God's company in prayer. And he obviously was in that type of situation because an angel saw him. And if you read on, which I tell you we're going to do, Peter was in the sixth hour, which is noon to three, and he got really hungry and fainted. You know, basically it says I don't know what he got, but he got, maybe he got low blood sugar or something. But he'd been in communication and prayer with God long enough through the lunch hour that he was getting kind of faint-hearted. Well, let's keep reading. Day two. The next day, as he went on a journey near the city, Peter went up on the housetop to pray. So these guys are on their way to see Peter. Peter doesn't know they're there yet. So he goes up on top of the housetop to pray, and it says about the sixth hour. Does anybody know why they put these times in there for us? I mean, it's just really interesting to me. I mean, if you really dig into why, it's interesting. It's there for a reason. It says that he became very hungry and wanted to eat, but while he made ready, he fell into a trance. And he saw heaven open like a great sheet, bound on four corners, descending down from heaven to earth. And there were all kind of four-footed animals of the earth and wild beasts, creeping things, birds of the air. And the voice said, "Rise, Peter, kill and eat." But Peter said, "No, not so, Lord. For I have never eaten anything uncommon or unclean." I want to stop right there. Peter is so quick to say, what? "No, not so, Lord." It's amazing. He did that one other time, I think. 15, and a voice spoke to him again the second time and says, "What God has cleansed, you must not call common." This was done three times. And then the object was taken up into heaven again. Verse 17. Now while Peter wondered within himself. How many of us do that? How many of our kids do that? I'm wondering within myself right now. It is a lost art, I think, to take time to think through things that may be a problem, maybe an issue, maybe a think ahead of something that might be a real strategic decision or a problem that you may be having. I mean, to take a moment to just wonder about it, to think about it. I can see when you have that little time sometimes that we sometimes just pick this thing up. When we have a time to wander, you know. I don't know, I'm old school, old-hearted guy. I think a lot of times it's good to just kind of look off into the sky and just, you know, put things in perspective, basically. Some of your best thoughts, I know, come from that. I mean, there's a lot of books written about it. Arnold Schwarzenegger has a book that's out called Be Useful. I've read it. He says, I like to take a jacuzzi. And I can, he says that I think about things and it becomes very clear to me when I do a jacuzzi. It's so funny to I did the audio book. Can you tell? But again, to take that time away from just the busyness of our life and to think through things and wonder about things is a healthy thing to do. I told you I was ADHD. All right. Now, while Peter wondered within himself what this vision was and what he had seen, and basically right then and there, behold, two men who had been sent from Cornelius made inquiry for Simon's house and stood before the gate. And they called and asked whether Simon, whose surname was Peter, was lodging there. So, I wrote down here that we need to be ready for anything at any time. When we pray and we ask God to bless us, we give Him thanks, we ask Him to bless us, we think about things that we need and want, like safety and health for our family and our friends and being safe and growing as a Christian, and saying all that stuff is very important, but you just need to be completely aware at any moment in time that you may have an opportunity to take advantage of something that you have prayed about. And it happened right here with Peter. I think that he was in a state of wondering about what he was doing, what he had seen, how he was supposed to react to that. And then, you know, while he's the wondering, you know, this is what he hears. And he's like, he comes out of it. And right then and there, it's time for him to do basically what he's been told to do. I'm sure that whatever Peter was given, he could handle. Because we're told we're not going to be given anything more than we can't handle. He could handle that. And we need to be prepared also to handle things that come from the prayers that we offer, the prayers that we ask for. And they may come, and we need to be aware that they are coming and look for them. Because that's what faith is all about. Okay. Any comments before I start reading again? This is still day two. Okay, verse 19. While Peter thought about the vision, the Spirit had said to him, behold, three men are seeking. Arise and go down. It says, go down and go with them, doubting nothing, for I have sent them. This is what the Spirit told him. Then Peter went down to the men who had been sent to him from Cornelius and said, yes, I'm whom you seek. For what reason have you come? And they said, Cornelius, the centurion, a just man who fears God and has a good reputation among all the nation of the Jews, has divinely instructed by the holy angel to summon you to this house and to hear words from you. Then he invited them in to his house. I think it's important to get the whole story. I know he knows the whole story, but to be hospitable and to get to know people, especially since the fact that the people that came to him were not typically ones that spent time, like, communed with Jews. They were two separate people. We talked about that earlier. It was very uncommon for that to happen. A group of Gentiles to be asked to come in to stay, especially, you know, overnight, and be hospitable to others. I mean, we know Jesus talked about it in one of his parables. Which parable? That's not the right answer. But the Good Samaritan, you know, the hospitable Good Samaritan. The fact that Peter asked them to come in, you know, the interesting thing about that is the urgency of the matter. For instance, you know, he'd gotten a vision. Immediately these guys came in and said, "We're the people that were sent to you." And Peter didn't get in a rush to just go straight away, because, first of all, it's a long ways. It was the end of the day. It was probably the back end of the sixth hour. It's getting late. Come on inside, have something to eat, stay the night. Totally uncommon. I would have a hard time with this. This would be hard for me to invite somebody in that was basically coming in. I know there's divine intervention involved in this, but to be that hospitable is a tough thing for a lot of people, yeah, me included. I have to just tell you. At the end of the day, somebody came up and says, "You know, I'm very interested in becoming a Christian." I would talk to him on my front porch. I probably would not be, stay the night and we'll talk all night. I should be, but I need to work on that. I tell you, I want to be vigilant about being safe. And I think, but the attitude is what I'm saying. I think the attitude is not the barricade, not the wall that we continually put up, because, you know, we see the things that are going on in the world, and we're dividing ourselves politically, and we're dividing ourselves through different beliefs. And there's such a big, huge barricade that we put up. And we're really comfortable here together. But when it becomes somebody outside of that, as in this example, to pray to be able to receive those that are not the same as us is really something that we all should work on. I know I need to work on that. I mean, we're seeing right now the war in Israel with Gaza, that's escalated outside of that into Syria, which is Lebanon. And Iran is getting involved. And I'm sure the Russians are stepping up as well to get involved in some way. The Chinese are stepping in. They like to profit from this war. And it's all over a neighbor that, you know, they just can't find common ground. And the death and destruction is incredible. And I'm definitely not, and I'm not going to get into the politics of it at all. But, I mean, if we could see people for just who they are, like this story, like what we're seeing in Acts chapter 10, it would dramatically affect a lot of the things that are going on. I can't solve that problem, but I think that taking a position either way is a dangerous thing to do. I mean, I'm not for terrorism, not at all. I mean, Hamas and that disaster, but it is the casualties from this issue is just a situation that basically is a difference of religion. And this is what we have right here. These are two people that are different types of people, but one has seen that there's something more out there than just the typical pagan religion that the Romans are involved in. And he sees that there's something there that he wants to be involved in. So it's different in that way, because there is someone there, Cornelius, is seeing, yes, I can see the benefit, the Christian benefit, because it talks about what he's doing. And Peter, though, had kind of a struggle with the fact that he was going to have to eat something different, or he was going to have to accept other things that he wasn't used to accepting. That was a tough thing for Peter, because three times the example was given. He was confused about the whole thing, but because it was from God, you know, he let these people come in. He was hospitable to them. He learned more about it, and on day three, it says, the next day Peter went with him, and they traveled an entire day to Caesarea to see Cornelius. And I know it was tense, because we read right here that on day three, basically the last part of 23, it says, on the next day, Peter went with them, and some of the brethren from Joppa accompanied him. Now, I don't know why it would say that, other than the fact that I know that if I was traveling into a Gentile's home, which was totally not acceptable, I would want some, you know, support there with me. I think that it was important that Peter was not alone, and he had some witnesses for a lot of reasons. And we'll read about that, but, you know, it could have been for just pure safety. He wasn't quite sure exactly what was going to happen. I mean, he was told to go with these people. He was told to accept other people. But all he got was a good report from the people that came from Cornelius's house. So on 24, day four, they get there, and it says the following day they entered the town there, Caesarea, and Cornelius was waiting for them and had called together his relatives and close friends. As Peter was coming in, Cornelius met him and fell down at his feet and worshiped him. But Peter lifted him up and said, "Stand up. I myself am also a man." And as he talked with them, he went in and found many who had come together. Then they said to them, "You know how unlawful it is for a Jewish man to keep company or go to one of another nation. But God has shown me I should not call any man common or unclean." When did the light bulb go off for Peter? I mean, it says that he saw the food drop, the animals, the creatures, the everything come out of the sky up and down three times. And at the end of that, he was just like, "I am in wonder. I don't completely get it. Let me just chill out here for a moment and try to get this all figured out." And then he didn't have much time, I don't think, before the door, they knocked on the door. But when did Peter finally realize? When do you think that happened for him? Can we assume it happened right now, right at that point? When they were at the gate, when the men came to the house at the gate. So he was done being confused about it. Yeah. 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 Yeah, I'm going to just say one thing you said really I liked a lot, and I'd like to continue this next week, but the centurion at the foot of the cross, I mean, all of this started at that point. That's the catalyst for everything that we're reading about right now in Acts chapter 10. It happened at the foot of the cross. I like that, and I believe that's exactly right. A lot of good points. I really appreciate that, and I'm going to write all those down, and we'll expand on that next week. This is a great story, and I appreciate your attention tonight. Thank you very much for being here, and good luck with the hurricane.